When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast, Episode 23.
Without further delay. Without further delay. Your guru. Your guide to a better life through real estate investing. Through real estate investing. Matt Theriault.
Hello and greetings from the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. Happy New Year from the podcast that's going to show you how to build wealth through creative real estate investing so you will have the option to realistically retire in the next 10 years or less and enjoy the good life while you're still young enough to do so. My name is Matt Theriault, author, full-time real estate investor, and family man. If this is your first time listening to this show, you're going to want to do two things. First of all, welcome. Glad that you're here. But you're going to want to go back and listen to episode one for the ground rules of the show. And two, I want you to download the free real estate investing course, How to Do Deals, No Money Required. And you can get that at freerealestateinvestingcourse.com. It's a step-by-step course of where I unveil the mystery around doing deals with no money or credit. And that's yours for free at freerealestateinvestingcourse.com. Okay, so before we get into today's episode, I've got a few announcements. First, I want to say thank you to Joe and Alex over at the Real Estate Investing Mastery Podcast for having me on this week as their guest. And if you haven't subscribed to their podcast, I highly recommend it. They've got a great show. They're great guys. They've got a wealth of information and they're very successful real estate investors. So go check them out over at Real Estate Investing Mastery Podcast. And second, I want to say thanks to all of you that have recently left reviews on this podcast. I mean, thanks to 212 and Boo Bias. That's how he spelled it. There was a bunch of S's at the end. Big Ad and Joe McCall, thank you for your reviews in iTunes. Those reviews, they really help with the rankings. So if you like what you hear on this show, feel free to log into iTunes, search Epic Real Estate Investing, and let me know what you think. Okay? Much appreciated on that. Third, I know many of you have been waiting. I've been getting a lot of emails and inquiries as to when the Epic Pro Academy is going to launch. So I've got good news for you. January 12th is the day. And in the meantime, I've posted a few new videos on the homepage of Epic Pro Academy that'll probably be of interest to you. The first one, The Only Realistic Road to Financial Freedom That No One Is Telling You About. That video is up. The second video, you can steal one of my top three methods for finding motivated sellers. I walk you through that step by step on how to do that. And as soon as I'm done recording this podcast, I'm going to go work on a third video for you. How to eliminate the risk from your real estate investing. I mean, imagine that. How much investing would you do if there was no risk? I'm going to show you on that video exactly how I go into each deal with absolute certainty and no fear. I know I'm going to win every single time, and I'm going to show you how you can do the same thing also, okay? Now, I won't be leaving those videos up forever, so be sure to go check them out, and you can view them at epicproacademy.com. Okay, so we're going to start off the new year resuming our series of interviewing real estate investors doing real estate in today's market. But what makes this series so special to me and what I believe makes it unique from other interview type formats is the people I've chosen for this series, they've got nothing to sell. They have nothing to promote. And they're not speakers, they're not teachers, they're not gurus, and you'll probably notice that many of them aren't really the most polished speakers either. I mean, they just don't teach, they don't publicly speak. All they do is real estate. And to maintain integrity with this show's theme, I want you to hear how it really is out there. I want you to get an unfiltered sense of what's really going on and what it takes to be successful in this business. I want you to know how this business really works. I mean, it's a shame that you're probably only going to get real answers from real estate investors, real estate investors with no hidden agendas. I mean, it's so often that people get their real estate investing education and their information from people that used to do real estate, or they do a little real estate here and there, but selling their real estate information is now their primary business. And there are so many that do that because they found it's much easier to sell the information on how to do real estate than it is to actually do the real estate itself. And I'll never lie to you about this. I'll never lie to you about that, that real estate, it's hard work. It can be stressful. It can be frustrating. And oftentimes it can keep you up at night. It keeps me up at night. And it's going to take probably more work and more money than you're going to be comfortable with investing. But at the same time, if you stick to it, if you stay committed and you maintain some flexibility, and what I mean by that is not everything happens how it's supposed to. In fact, frequently, stuff can come right out of left field and smack you right upside the head, doling out painful lesson after painful lesson. I mean, just hard blows of reality. And that's what I mean by recommending that you stay flexible. And then just keep your eye on the prize. Okay, keep your eye on the prize because it does get easier as you go. And the rewards at the end are like nothing else that today can really provide. I mean, giant chunks of cash and steady streams of cash flow make life a much better existence. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I love real estate. I mean, the pleasures and the rewards of successful real estate investing far outweigh the pains and the lessons. But just know that there's going to be some pain. There's going to be some lessons. You're never going to escape that. If you happen to escape that, I mean, you're probably just not investing in real estate. And if you keep your investing in this perspective, at least this is my perspective. This is how I view it. I'm either making money or I'm learning. I'm either making money or I'm learning. Now, some of those learning experiences, they're much more expensive than others, but look at those painful experiences in that way. It's just education. I mean, and why would you ever do what so many people do? And I've never understood this. Why would you pay so much for your education through those experiences and then quit? I never understood that. I mean, would a doctor, after investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in their education, investing countless hours of blood, sweat, and tears, and practicing their performance and perfecting their technique, would they just quit after their first malpractice lawsuit, citing that the medical industry, it doesn't work? It's too risky. It doesn't work in my market. I'm just going to go find something else to do. Would you ever hear that? No, of course not. You would not. That doctor would simply take note of what got him or her into that malpractice predicament, and they'd just be sure not to make the same mistake again. They wouldn't make the same mistake twice, and then they'd keep going. Look at your investing. Look at your real estate investing lessons in the exact same way, and just keep going. It's worth it in the end. And besides, I mean, what's the alternative? What else can you go do to experience all the different benefits real estate offers? I mean, you can create two types of income in real estate. You can create active income and you can create passive income. You get amazing tax breaks and shelters like nothing else out there offers. I mean, you can virtually eliminate your tax liability through real estate investing. You can create equity. You can benefit from appreciation. And you can control and manipulate the power of leverage inside of real estate like no other investment can provide. So stick it out. Don't quit with the first or second hiccup, okay? Got it? Don't quit after your first or second lesson. I mean, you likely paid good money for those lessons. Now you know, and your future is brighter because you now know. All right, so today on the phone, I've got a really good friend of mine, and we actually met during a real estate transaction. In fact, it was my very first real estate transaction, my first experience as a real estate investor. And although he and his buddy, his partner, they did most of the work, I did find the deal and I was able to execute the exit strategy for them so that we all got paid. So I do consider this my first deal, and that's how I met today's guest. He's an accomplished fix and flipper, yet also understands the power and importance of buying and holding. He understands the power of cash flow. He's got nothing to sell, nothing to promote. He's just a regular old full-time real estate investor with over 20 years of experience, and he's doing me a favor by coming on the show today to share his knowledge and experience with you. So on the phone, I have my good friend and business associate, Mr. Steve Kassane. Steve, welcome to the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast.
Thanks, Bian.
Good. Glad you're here. So just as, before we get into some of these questions, and how did you get started investing in real estate, and what was the initial attraction?
I got started investing in real estate it's gone 1990, and the initial, basically, I purchased a home, fixed it up, lived in it for about 6 months, and then I saw the market was starting to turn, so I actually ended up reselling it pretty quickly. get out before the market started turning at that point in time. And then at that point in time, I was looking at where to put my money, and I ended up starting to invest, not in California at that time, but down in Texas. And so I basically just, real estate was something I've always been interested in. And at that point in time, like I said, the returns, made some good money on my initial purchase. And at that point in time, went down to Texas, started buying, small duplexes and fourplexes type of things from the RTC and things, and then just kept going from there.
Got it. What's today's, what's your primary acquisition strategy, or where do you find most of your deals?
Today I'm doing mostly, basically doing single families and duplexes,
mm-hmm.
and mostly in the lower end market. I'm looking at a resale, on the resale side of it, I'm looking, between $200,000 and $300,000. I'm trying not to, right now in today's market, my resale numbers, I'm keeping it under 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm purchasing things, in the $100,000 to $250,000 mark.
Got it.
And, mainly, like I said, in the entry level market, cause I feel, that's the safest and the best market. The entry level got hit really hard from the subprimes, and they got hit hard and quick.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at the lower end market, they got hit hard, and like I said, hard and quick versus some of the other markets. If you look at the $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 markets, there's still a lot of, there's still a lot of foreclosures filtering through all the markets, but, I see more downside in the higher end market than I do in the lower end. So I'm focusing on doing, buying, purchasing single families and duplexes and fixing them up and reselling them.
Got it. So you're doing more of a fix and flip is your main strategy right now?
Right now I'm doing fix and flip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to look at the, buy and hold this year. So far in like 2011 was doing mainly fix and flip, and now starting to continue with the fix and flip, and also starting to look at some buy and holds going forward, because I think, We're close to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that seems to be the consensus right now. So for your fix and flips, where are you finding your deals to fix and flip?
Majority of the fix and flips in this year were going through buying REOs.
Mm-hmm.
Buying REOs, I think, is the majority of where our deals come from. We haven't been going down to the courthouse. We stopped going to the courthouse after everything going on with the MERS started happening. And, all of a sudden you were purchasing properties, and next thing you know, you were being sued for different things along with the banks and everyone else. You were one of the many people on that list.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, over the last 18 months, we've pretty much been focusing on the majority of our deals have been coming, through REOs, working with brokers who are dealing with REOs and trying to get the deals through them.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, it's very good. As you know, it's very competitive. There's a lot of people out there doing that same thing. But, if you can build a relationship and you get a foot in the door, we find good deals there, and we find enough of them to keep us busy. So.
Right. For those that might not know, can you explain to the audience what MERS is?
Yeah, MERS was the... I forget the exact initials. It's like the mortgage something. It was a servicing company. It was somebody who basically started servicing all the mortgages for the different banks. So if Countrywide or Bank of America or Wells Fargo, had a loan that back in 2004, 2005, they would transfer it over to MERS, and MERS was basically handling everything with that mortgage. They were handling the payments, handling the, processing the payments, processing any, transfer of, if that note got sold, as many of those mortgages and the mortgage-backed securities, they were packaged and they were resold, and MERS was tracking all of that for,
mm-hmm.
for the banks and everybody. And so they were handling all that. And then, obviously when the market collapsed and a lot of those loans went bad, and they may have been part of a mortgage-backed security, it was kind of like, it was hard to determine, which mortgage went bad, what's the effect on that bond or on that security, where the mortgages were securitized. And anyways, bottom line, there was a lot of gray areas that people weren't sure if everything was followed as far as transferring, you know, that individual mortgage from the bank to the to MERS, and then eventually it was being foreclosed on, and, you know, was everything processed correctly? And it was hard to track all that, and so therefore that whole issue came up about 18 months, 2 years ago, where people were saying, well, I was incorrectly foreclosed on, and all of a sudden now, you know, if you were buying a property down at the courthouse, you were buying it, you basically were buying that note, and then you had to go and evict that the homeowner. And that's where attorneys are starting to get involved and saying, well, we're suing, you know, whoever bought the note, we're suing whoever, you know, the bank and everyone else involved. And, you know, next thing you know, you see 10 parties, you know, on the lawsuit, and they were tying up property, you know, so all of a sudden you couldn't go and start doing work on that house. You had to deal with the lawsuit first. So we started, we basically at that point in time, we started staying away. And since then we've found enough deals through the REOs that we haven't gotten back at this time. So.
Got it. You said you had developed relationships with brokers that have those REO relationships. Have you been proactive about developing those relationships? How do you go about meeting those types of brokers?
Yeah, basically meet them through our dealings, basically. A lot of them, you know, some of them I've been working with for even before this whole downturn, because I've been dealing in Los Angeles market now for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them, you know, had a relationship before, and then so we continued that. But even right now, you know, we'll talk, you know, we see somebody who's doing a lot of, whose name pops up on a lot of listings. You know, we'll try to, you know, make an introduction and, you know, give them a call. Try to, you know, we'll make an offer, and then, you know, if we make an offer, obviously, you know, just like everyone else, a lot of times it doesn't go through because they've got, you know, 30 other offers, but we'll try to get our foot in the door and try to, you know, get to know, you know, give them a call, try to work with them and build a relationship that way, you know, and
right.
Take them to lunch.
Right. Good old fashioned schmoozing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like you can't, you know, you can't sit there and say, hey, I do a lot of investments and, you know, pick me. You know, kind of thing. It's like, you know, usually you end up getting rejected a couple of times, but you start talking to that person, and next, you know, you slowly get them to know that, okay, yeah, I'm making offers, and then if they have deals, you know, they know that you're going to come through. And the main thing is, once you do start working with them, and you know, you have to give them an answer quickly, and then once you do say you're going to do it, you have to follow through. Otherwise, you know, you could easily, you know, they have to know that they can rely on you. If, you know, if you're going to, you say, yeah, I'll buy it at that price and I'll close on it in 10 or 15 days, then you have to perform.
Got it. So, let's see. What is your typical day looking like right now? I mean, I know you're a full-time real estate investor. You're doing fix and flips and you're starting to, look at, you know, buy and holds for this year. And I want to ask you about that in a second, but what does your typical day look like?
Typical day is, in the mornings, you know, up looking at, you know, we look at all the new listings, you know, so we're, you know, in the first part of the day, we're looking at, you know, we're all looking at the MLS. We have somebody who's looking at the MLS hard and seeing any new listings and things, and we are following up on that. And then, you know, any deals that we get, you know, we're talking to those brokers, not every day, but obviously if we get a call. But, and then in the mornings after that, about 10 o'clock though, then we're downtown looking at looking at potential deals or, you know, looking at different projects that we have going on, follow up on that. And then back in the office, usually by around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, looking. And then again, we try to spend the majority of our day looking for new deals. So that's the hardest thing to do right now, is to find the deals to keep you going. I mean, once we get the deal once we get a deal and we got it wrapped up, then, you know, we've got the crews out there and they can, you know, we come up with the plan, what we're going to do as far as rehabbing it and everything. And once that's going, then, you know, it's easier to monitor that. But the majority of our time right now in this market, because it's pretty tough to find deals, is looking for deals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're doing, you know, we do the, you know, we're looking for the REOs, but we're also, you know, we do deal directly with we have a couple of programs where we do mailers. So we do mailers out to people.
Mm-hmm.
We get a couple of deals out of that, but it's not like it used to be. A lot of times when you you know, you do get a response and you are talking to somebody who wants to sell, they're usually underwater, and we tend not to want to, you know, deal with going through the whole short sale cycle and
right.
things like that. But so we tend not to, you know, not to follow up on those. So we do mailers, but we have found some good, you know, it's paid for itself because we have got a couple deals that way last year. So
got it. So tell me about your mailers. Is this a service that you use? Do you do a handwritten letter? Is it a typed letter? Do you do it yourself?
It's a typed letter. We have a number of standard letters that we have on the system, and we don't use a service. We're not sending hundreds of thousands all the time, but you know, we're sending a few hundred every month, and it's a we get different reports from Title on who to send it to, and you know we search certain criteria that we like, and that we get a good response from. And we just have a few letters geared specifically, you know, depending on what we're mailing on. You know, we have the letters here, and we do that in house right now. We have looked at possibly having there's some cheap services out there right now that you can do, you know, to have a lot of that done. We are looking at that, but we haven't actually pulled the trigger on that.
Got it. So when you send out your mailers and the phone starts to ring, do you have that go to a voice answering service, or do you answer those phone calls live?
No, we have an answering service for that.
You do? And then you just collect those numbers, and then you return the phone calls later on?
Correct, yeah, because we want someone to answer the phone all the time. And when we find out, you know, if you don't have someone actually answering the phone, they're just, most of the time, that person's going to hang up. So
right.
It's worth it to have an answering service to go pick those up, get the information that, you know, they have a dialogue that they follow, ask mm-hmm. certain questions, and then we follow up with them.
Oh, good. So you have a live person, a live answering service.
Yes.
That's cool. Very cool. I think that's a good approach. What are some of your... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because we used to, you know, prior to that, we would... if you didn't have a live answering service and you had them call in the office and someone was in there... We typically, you know, you could come back to the office, you'd see, okay, you know, you can look to see how many calls you got and see all these hang-ups, and they're like, okay, they're not 800 numbers, so they're local numbers, people are calling and hanging up, so chances are it's from our letter, and sometimes you only get that one shot to really get them. So it's worth it to have somebody, a live person, answering the phone.
Exactly. I totally agree. I mean, if you don't get that person when they're calling on their time, you know, it's hard to get them back in the mood and the mindset to get them to discuss their situation.
Correct. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. So how is you're investing mostly in California, right?
Yeah, we do have property out of state, but we're not active. We're just investing right now 100% in California.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. So with the system that you kind of explained to me with your marketing and what your typical day looks like, how many fix and flips are you doing right now a year?
We did 16 last year.
16, that's good. And you are holding property right now. You do have some buy and holds. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, no, I have a number of rentals. Some of them more recent purchases. Some of them I have had for a long time. But yeah, have a number of duplexes that we have right now, and have some large, one or two larger buildings. 16 units, 12 units. We have started looking at those. You know, the smaller apartment buildings, when I say smaller, I mean, you know, under 20 units. So there are some good deals out there right now on those, especially in the C-type areas, which is, you know, kind of downtown, south central area. The big investors haven't really gone in there for those types of units. So we do see some. We do follow those, and if we do see a good deal there, we will do something on those. But majority, we're focusing when we look at fix and flips. When buy and holds, we're looking at, you know, starting to do more buy and holds this year. We're looking at the smaller, you know, when I say smaller units, we're looking at actually fourplexes and under, because we see good opportunity there.
Got it. So with those fourplexes and those duplexes, as you're starting to look for your buy and holds, is there a certain, how do you select those? Like, first, how do you select the area? And as far as when you find your right area, the property that you actually choose that you're going to make an offer and that you want to buy and hold, how do you analyze that? And what's kind of the deciding factor whether this is thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, the first thing we look at is we look at gross rent multipliers, just our key thing in the beginning. We say, okay, you know, number one, is it rented or not? So that's the first question. Because on all the ones that we buy, we want two things before we do anything. So we want cash flow and equity from day one. So we want to buy cat. We don't want something that's okay in 5 years from now it'll start cash flowing. We want, you know, we're looking at something that's going to cash flow, right away. So if it's empty, we know in 2 months we're going to have that fixed up, rented, and we're going to be cash flowing that right away. The other thing we want to do is we want to buy equity, just like we do on the flips. If we're buying a place for $100,000 and we're going to resell for $200,000, well, we're looking at that same thing on the buy and holds, because we want to buy a duplex or a fourplex that's undervalued, and once we do our repairs and get it rented, then we have built in equity. So two things we're looking for: equity and cash flow from day one. And just on a general, we look at the first thing we look at right away is we say, okay, we're looking, we're doing a lot of stuff downtown. We are looking on the west side for buying homes also, because we do see that it's a good deal on the west side long term. That's going to do really well. But our minimum GRM, we're looking for something that's GRM of 7% or less. So we don't pay more than 7% for gross rent multiplier right now. That's what we're looking at. So if it's more than 7%, we typically won't look at it.
Got it. So you'd said that you did mostly fix and flips in 2011. You did 16 of those, and you'd mentioned earlier that you think we're getting close to the bottom. What are you seeing in the market, or what are you reading, or what types of indicators are you looking at that has you believing that we are close to the bottom?
Well, I believe we're close to the bottom in the lower end for sure. When I say again, in those areas that with a resale value of under $300,000, I believe we're close to the bottom, closer or near the bottom. Those areas got hit hard, and we see, when we do a flip, we know that there's a lot of pent up demand for those homes. If you price it right, you're going to get a lot of offers right away. The only issue really is it's hard for people to get loans, but the demand is there. But there's obstacles for those people to buy. But and those buyers under $300,000, purchasing a home under $300,000, it's usually it's cheaper for them to buy that house and pay rent and pay the mortgage than it is to rent that house. So the rent versus buy decision is favorable for doing those types of deals. But we don't see that on the other, on the upper end, or I say not the upper end, but the middle. If you get the property, between five, middle for LA is, $500,000 to $1 million. $1 million, we don't see the same, we're not as positive in that area as we are in the lower end, because the equation is a little different, and the different factors affecting those houses. The rent versus buy decision doesn't always make sense in that, if you're buying a $700,000 home, your mortgage may not be cheaper than going and renting a house in similar to that. And the other thing, there's a lot of unknown issues impacting those houses. There's a lot of negative things coming out of Washington that have a bigger impact on those types, on the $700,000 or $900,000 home. Whether they're going to, if the mortgage interest deduction goes away, which we don't think it's going to go away, but they've been talking now for over 12 months that they want to eliminate the mortgage interest deduction for anyone making over $250,000. Well, if that goes away, that's kind of a major impact on that $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 house, because now all of a sudden, if you're making over $250,000 and you're not going to get the mortgage interest deduction, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go buy that house right now. So we still see a lot of negative things coming out of out of Washington that's having a negative impact on those types of homes, but we don't see it. It's not having the same impact on the lower end homes, because again, whether you get the mortgage interest deduction or not for a $300,000 home, it's still cheaper for you to buy and pay the mortgage than to, even without the interest deduction. And plus, you're making under $250,000, so it's not an issue. Again, so we see it being near the bottom. I mean, we still see the upper end, just like we've seen in the last couple of months. There's been the actual price in California has come down, but the majority of that is mainly due to the number of higher-end homes selling. And again, I think a lot of that's a result. So therefore, the percentage of higher end homes selling November was less than, say, in April, May, or June, and therefore we've seen the average price and the median price in California coming down the last couple of months. But the majority of that is due to the fact that there's not enough, there's less upper end home selling, and we think that's a lot of that due to, you know, negative things coming out of Washington. People sitting there saying, okay, you know, well, I'm going to wait till everything kind of, till we figure everything out. As far as, you know, like mortgage interest deduction and a lot of other things come out of Washington, people are on the sidelines until all that clears up.
Got it. Very cool. So I know you've been doing this for a long time, Steve, and you've been doing this since 1990, as you mentioned. How much do you think you've invested in your actual real estate investing education, and do you continue to invest in your education?
Yeah, no, I invest all the time. Unfortunately, I don't have a budget. Some people I know go into the year and they say, "Okay, I'm going to spend this much on my education." I don't do that exactly. So, but I do take courses all the time. You know, if I see something good, I do it basically. It's more selective than, you know, saying, "Okay, I'm going to spend $2,000 or $3,000 this year." I do it. It's more selective. If it's a good course and I think it makes sense and something that, you know, I want to know about, I'll go take that. You know. I subscribe to a couple of different newsletters to stay on top of, on top of what's going on. Because as much as I try to stay on top of what's going on, you can't stay on top of everything. So, one is like subscribe. You know, Bruce Norris's letter is very good. I think he does a great job at really quantifying, you know, exactly what's going on. You know, not just saying here's what I think. He actually gets in and quantifies it with you know, facts and charts and everything. And I think that's really helpful. And then really staying on. You know, yeah. But do take a course probably every other month or so. End up taking at least a one day course. I've been involved with real estate clubs. So, you know, once a month, go to different meetings. Talking to people at those clubs and seeing how what they're doing, and also seeing, you know, the different speakers that they have come there to talk about, you know, different aspects of the market and what they're doing to, you know, yeah, things are changing so quickly that, you know, 3 years ago no one was doing REOs. Now everyone's doing REOs and things. So, you know, REOs, there's a lot of different ways to buy houses, and as the market, you know, as things change, other ways of buying houses will, you know, may start making sense in 5 to 6 months. So, you know, you want to be on top of what's going on, so you know when to make that switch and when to start doing different things. Because REOs are hot right now. I mean, they will be for a long time, given the number that are going to be coming on. But there's also going to be other areas where you can find good deals out there that will start making sense soon. Yeah, no, so I. To answer your question, I think it's really important to invest in your education, and I do that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of education, what is something you now know that you wish you would have known when you got started?
Creative financing. There's a lot of ways to buy and hold property, and a lot of ways to pay for, if you can find a deal. There's no reason you can't get that deal done. If, you know, whether you have the money or whether you need to bring somebody in on that deal and talking to somebody who, you know, the hardest thing, you know, you make money when you buy the property. You know, you don't make money when you sell. You make money when you buy it. So if you're out there, and whether you're a big time investor or a small investor, you can find a good deal and you have the knowledge to then go and either, you know, put the deal together yourself, or at least realize, hey, you know what, I have a good deal, I have it locked up, but I don't know what to do. If you have the contacts or you know, you've got the education to then talk to somebody and say, here's what I've got, you can make that work. So I think, you know, knowing about creative financing and knowing, having a good network of people that you can turn to, so that, you know, when you do all that work to find a good deal, that you don't lose it. So looking back in hindsight, yeah, just getting out there, networking with people, having a good core group of people that you can work with, whether it's, you know, a lender, an investor who you can turn to and say, hey, here's the deal. So really, excuse me, really getting out there, A, and networking, and then creating a good a good group of people that you can work with and talk to when you do find a deal, and just knowing more about the financing, because, you know, once you know about the financing and how, and different ways to finance and fund a deal, it's one of the key things in this market. I mean, once you find a deal, you can get somebody to fix it up. You can get someone to sell it for you, but you know, finding the deal and putting the deal together is key. So I think knowing all the different options that you have is, and getting educated on that is important.
Got it. Do you have maybe a story about one of the more creative ways that you've acquired a property?
Yeah. Well, back in the early 2000s, it was purchased a 16-unit property. It was on the market. The guy actually ended up buying about three places from this one individual. He had a lot of apartment buildings and different things, and he ran into some trouble and was trying to unload a number of them, and he had to sell them really quick. So basically, ended up talking to a hard again. It's kind of what I was describing before. I had a good deal. I knew I could make the deal work. Now it's just a matter of, you know, getting this guy the money that he needed to sell it, because, you know, he needed cash. He couldn't just do it. You know, we couldn't do any kind of he couldn't carry anything or do anything like that. So basically, ended up getting a hard money loan in first position. We got him to take a second position, and then I ended up going out and actually kind of getting a silent third, and using that silent third to put up money. It was more like somebody I knew, because, you know, and then buying that second out right after we closed. It was kind of, I'm trying to remember the exact reasons we had to do it. It was kind of funky. But, you know, that was one way. Yeah, we had to get a hard money loan up front. So we're paying 11% on the money. Paying off the second, we had to pay it off within 4 months, because the seller had to have money within a certain time frame. So we were able to convince him to take that, you know, do that second, and then we'd get him paid off within 4 months, and then we have to go out and get that money to pay him off. So, yeah, well, that was one. It wasn't very, that's not super creative or anything, but it's...
Right. I mean, just knowing the what your options are, I guess, you know, that pulling three different people or three different financing sources into a deal is, you know, a lot of people out there looking that they think they have to have the money to go out and invest, and, you know, and yeah, you do need the money to invest, but it doesn't always have to be your money. And there's multiple sources to get that from. And that's kind of what you did there.
Yeah, and that was, yeah, that turned into be a no money down deal. People said, oh, you're crazy. You borrow money at 11%. I said, I'll borrow money at 20% if it's going to cash flow. I literally had people saying, wow, you're nuts paying 11%. I'm like, why? I mean, it's a property I don't own today. In a month and I'm going to own it. I'm going to pay somebody 11%. They're going to be happy. I'm going to collect my rent, so I'm going to put money in my pocket every month. We're all going to be happy. So,
right.
That's one thing you too, is, you know, not to get, you know, it doesn't matter what interest rate you're paying. If you have to pay a high interest rate, to get a good deal, that's going to, you know, pay you at the end of the month, at the end of every month, it's worth it. So.
Exactly. You know, I've got a half a dozen properties in Illinois, which I know I paid over market value for, but I was able to get in with seller financing at such a low money down, I'm getting 30% ROI. So as long as I'm cash flowing, I'm getting 30%. I mean, where else are you going to get that? And I've got a lot of people that kind of said the same thing to me. I was nuts to pay that much for those properties. And I was like, well, it's 30% return on my investment. And
yeah,
long as it's cash flowing and making money, I mean, you're investors. That's what you're supposed to do, is put your money to work and have it bring more back to you.
Yeah, and it's paying you every month, so it's no big deal to hold that. So you can hold that for 7 years, and 7 years from now, you'll probably be sitting, you know, you'll have a lot of equity in those.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So let me ask you this, Steve, the last question, or actually second to last question. If you lost everything today and you had to start from scratch, how would you restart?
I would restart doing single-family flips. I would go out there, I'd find a deal, and then once I found that deal, you know, well, I'd start talking at the same time. Well, I do two things. I would start talking to people, you know, to potential money people. I'd say, okay, how am I, you know, who are potential money people out there that I could go to? And then I would right away start looking for single family flips and go find a good deal. And then once I found that deal, I'd make sure I had a couple different sources where I could go and say, here's a deal. And here's how much we're looking at, you know, you know, if you come in on this, you know, whatever you can work out with that investor, but I would find an investor to then, you know, either give you the money to do it, where you're just going to pay him a flat percentage, or bring him in on the deal. Either way, it's a win-win for you, because, you know, if you give away part of the deal, you're still getting something versus nothing. If you can pay him straight interest, that's great. So yeah, that's what I would start doing first. And the reason why doing that is because you can make money quicker, you know, versus a buy and hold, where, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, if you lost everything, then, you know, your first thing you have to do is get, you know, you have to get liquid again. So doing a fix and flip is the fastest way to get liquid, you know, get money back in your pocket. So to rebuild. But yeah, that's what I would do. I would start doing fix and flips right away if I lost everything.
Awesome. Yeah, that's you need the cash to create the cash flow, and now you got to flip properties to create that cash. I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
So I know you've done a ton of fix and flips and rehabs, and what are your? This was one of the burning questions that came in from one of my listeners. So I've been asking everyone that does fix and flips this one question: what are your three most important rehab tips you could share with someone just getting into fixing and flipping?
Know the market. When I say know the market, you need to know what you're going to sell that for. There's no way you can tell if it's a good deal or not if you don't really know the market. You know, you have to be very current on what's selling, and know your competition. You know, what else is out there for sale? What can I realistically sell this for? Do your research when you buy it. You don't want to find out surprises late, you know, after you close on that deal. So when I say do your research, I mean, like, you know, find out if there's any violations. Find out if there's city issues that you have to deal with. Because they can, you know, you can sit there and you think you're buying a great deal at $100,000, and then you know, after you close, you didn't do your research, and you find out that, you know, it has violations on it, and, you know, has illegal, you know, a couple square feet of, you know. Anyways, you don't want to find those out after the fact, because that you probably, if that's the case, then, and, you know, chances are you may have just lost money on that deal. So mainly you don't want to lose money on a deal. And it's okay, you know, if you don't make as much as you thought, but, you know, do your homework up front. So do your research. And always have multiple exit strategies. You know, markets change, things happen, you know. So, you know, right now in this kind of market, you know, on these fix and flips, I know, okay, I can sell this property, but, you know, let's say Europe blows up tomorrow, which is something that could easily happen.
Right.
And next thing you know, yeah, you know, all the banks in the U.S. are losing billions of dollars again. We're back to 2008, which is, you know, only 3 years ago. We're back to 2008 where, you know, you couldn't sell anything. You could have tons of buyers, but no one can get financing. So it could happen. So you need to be able to, you need multiple exit strategies. So if you can't sell that property, you know, will it cash flow for you?
Right. No, I agree with that. You should always have at least two, because quite often that first one, your plan A, doesn't work out. That happens all the time. So yeah, you need the plan B.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who aren't in this business anymore after 2006 and after 2007 and 2008. So.
Right. Exactly. Those were the gamblers.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So let's just end up. Well, what's in your investing future right now, Steve, that you're really excited about?
Well, for this year, we're looking at, like I said, continuing doing the fix and flips. But we're also, I'm excited to start really get into more of the buy and holds also as the year progresses.
Awesome. So yeah, the cash flow is the focus. I know you've got a family, you've got a bunch of kids. You made waffles for them this morning, and you know, yeah, cash flow makes all that happen.
Gotta keep those waffles flowing, man. You know?
Exactly. right. Yeah. So, well, thanks, Steve. This has been awesome. You're a wealth of information, and you know, we'd love to have you back if you'd be open to that.
Yeah, no, I'd be open to it, and thanks for the opportunity, and just. You know, everyone. I think everyone realizes how good real estate is, but it's if you look, yeah. I mean, look at the last couple of years. Just last year, you know, real estate, you know, stock market was flat or down. Bonds are flat. You know, it's you can't beat real estate, and it's, and it's real. You can see it and hold it, so it's good.
Exactly. That's my favorite part of it, actually.
Yeah. You know,
awesome.
You know, you have something. So.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking time out of your weekend, Steve, to join us. And you have a good weekend, and we'll talk soon.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
So that's my buddy Steve. And if you were listening, and if you've been listening to our last few interviews, all of our real estate investors doing real estate in today's market, you're probably starting to notice something about this business that you'll rarely find in a course, if you ever find it in a course. Or you're not going to find it in a seminar. You're not going to find it in a weekend real estate investing boot camp either. And what I'm speaking of is the real currency of this business is relationships. This is a people business. And it's those people and your relationships with those people that will cause your business to flourish. It'll cause your business to thrive. It'll cause your business to go on and on and on and around and around and around. It keeps it going. You see, every piece of real estate you buy or sell is going to be from another person. There are no silver bullets. You've got to get out there and you got to share yourself among other people, among other investors, among other real estate professionals, among real estate clubs, and among real estate networks. Your network is going to be the backbone of your business. And you develop that network with your people skills. In my opinion, it's the most powerful, most important skill that you can have as a real estate investor. It's your people skills. Because it doesn't matter how you find your deal, you're going to eventually have to talk to a person. And you know, if you haven't read it, go out and get Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I mean, your real estate investing business is going to benefit more from that book than any real estate investing book that I know of. And what I mean by that is you can be an absolute beginner in this business. You can totally mess up transactions. You can mess up at every single corner. But if everyone you deal with knows you, likes you, and trusts you, you're always going to get the deal over the next guy. You're always going to have a hand up. You're always going to have someone to help you. You're always going to have someone that looks in your favor and gives you breaks and gives you deals and gives you, it's just, if they know you, like you, and trust you, you're so far ahead than any other skill can put you. And that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is going to give you that skill. It's going to give you those people skills. I mean, do you remember what Steve said today when I asked him how he'd start over if he lost everything? I mean, yes, he said he'd start fixing and flipping properties to get liquid, right? He's got to create the cash, so you'd have to get liquid again. That's how he would do it. But how did he say he'd do it? He said he'd go out and he'd start talking to people. That's what he said. He didn't say he'd launch a website. He didn't say he would send out direct mail. He didn't say he'd go put up some more bandit signs. I mean, sure, all of those things work. They all have their place. They can complement your business in very powerful ways. I use all of that stuff. But that's not how he said he'd start. He said he'd start by talking to people. And a lot of people, they don't really want to hear that. But with every single one of my interviews, that's been a very common denominator. And they've been on the show. They've got nothing to sell, nothing to promote. They really don't care if you believe them or not. What your opinion is of them, what your belief about how they do their business, it's not going to affect their reality one way or the other. They're just sharing with you how it is. This is how we created our business. This is how we continue to build our business. And this is what's working today. And it's through people. Also, you'll notice that my recent guests, they've placed a big emphasis on finding deals. That's where most of their time is spent, in finding deals. And you're probably starting to notice that they all look for the deal before they look for the money to the deal. I mean, that's a huge mistake by new investors. They try to find the money first. Don't do that. Find the deal and the money will find you. I mean, I spent an entire episode, or maybe I spent two episodes on this. And if you missed it, you're going to want to go back and check that out. I'm not sure which episode that was. I mean, we've only got 23 episodes, not that many. I just don't have iTunes up right now. But just know, find the deal first and the money finds you. And they've all said that. They have no idea what questions I'm going to ask them. And they have all answered in almost precisely the same way. Hopefully you're starting to notice that. Another common denominator amongst these interviews, they all continue to invest in their education. I mean, you have to in this business. The dynamics, they're always changing. The market's always changing. The strategy is always changing. The laws are changing. The policy is changing. I mean, does a doctor or a lawyer stop with their education after college? No, it's ongoing. You've got to stay up to date. You never are going to know it all. Always be a student. I mean, even our guest today, Steve Kassane, has been investing since 1990, and he still invests in his education. hopefully the patterns amongst these interviews are starting to appear for you. And take heed. I mean, this is how it's done in the real world. This is how it's being done today in today's market. Now, our next episode, I've got another really great interview lined up for you with a woman who's so successful with her fix and flips. I mean, she's caught the attention of national TV, and she actually ended up on Flip That House. So that's next. You won't want to miss that episode. And to start the new year off right, go get your free real estate investing course, How to Do Deals, No Money Required. I mean, money, it certainly helps, but it's not required. And you can get that for free at freerealestateinvestingcourse.com. And lastly, go check out the new videos that I posted for you at epicproacademy.com. January 12th is our launch date, but I put some videos up there right now just to hold you guys over. All right, I'm here for you. This show is for you, and it's for your success. So let's make 2012 a successful year. Agreed? Awesome. So until next time, as a very wise person once said, a New Year's resolution backed by commitment is not just another resolution. It's reality waiting to happen. So commit to your education, commit to your business, and commit to this year being your best year ever. To your success, I'm Matt Theriault, living the dream.
Thank you for spending this time with Matt Theriault and the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. When you have a moment, stop by iTunes to leave your comments and let us know what you think of the show. And if you haven't done so already, get started investing today by visiting freerealestateinvestingcourse.com. To access Matt's free course, How to Do Deals, No Money Required. Until next time. To your success.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.